I'd like to call to order the 1,411th meeting of the Metro Board of Directors. And first item would be approval of the agenda. Any comments about the agenda? It's on. Yeah, hearing none, the agenda is approved. We have certifications of executive sessions. I will read it once, but it covers two separate meetings for October 8th and for today, October 22nd. I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at the board executive session on October 8th and October 22nd. The mic is on.
Let me see.
How's that? Okay. On October 8th and October 22nd, 2015, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under Board Bylaws Article 10, and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. Is there a second? Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The executive sessions are certified. We have minutes to approve. They are in your package. Minutes from September 25th, board meeting. Minutes from September 25th, executive session. Minutes from October 8th, executive session. And a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any comments to the minutes? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Public comment. We have two individuals who want time on public comment, and I will call their names. First, Heidi Case, and after her, Michael Sindrith. Would you get a mic for Ms. Case?
Good afternoon, board members. As usual, I'm going to be discussing some accessibility issues. Some of the board members have agreed and committed to not raising fares, but one of the proposed policy changes really will affect Metro access riders. And it was discussed at the Finance Committee, the possibility of people who have Metro access conditional eligibility have previously been incentivized that they can ride free on bus and rail if so that they aren't using Metro access and the cost is so high. So on the trips they are able to do on fixed route, they can do it for free. And one of the policy changes is suggesting that those people now pay when they use fixed rail. It would be at the senior or disability, which is about half price cost. But that certainly is a fair increase for people utilizing Metro access. So be aware of that as you're talking about no fare increases, that that's across the board and that the people with disabilities, often these are people who have very limited incomes, Social Security, possibly only SSI, and that is how they get out and participate in their community and engage and contribute to their community. And if they can't get there, then that's really going to affect them. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Spindren.
Good afternoon, all. Michael Sindrum, disabled veteran, served our country more than most. I shared some items with you, articles, Mr. Wekwa, and if the board and Ramada is truly serious about safety, why not voluntarily submit to the Federal Railroad Administration? My understanding is they have greater enforcement, greater inspection, and, you know, let's Let's do something that's going to have an impact. So why not voluntarily say, we will do it, plain and simple, right? Yesterday, front page news of the Express. This affects all of us, DMV, right? Alexandria, Mayor Yule, right here. Is D.C. losing its allure? And when it says D.C., it means Virginia, Alexandria, Maryland as well. With high housing costs, a troubled metro. Troubled metro. Front page news here, right? Not good. We have, and it troubles my heart, that Metro Access is being hammered for the poorest of the poor. That ought not be. And, Mr. Evans, that's a fair increase. You promised us none. So I echo the sentiment of the prior witness. You let students ride free. What about veterans? Freedom ain't free. The reason why we're not ducking grenades, bullets, and mortars is because we veterans have shed blood and put our life on the line for due process and fundamental fairness. Last meeting, I was here, and I wrote, and I read verbatim. Actually, let me back up a moment. January 28th of 2011, I wrote to you, Ms. Hutchins, I have not gotten a response to date, right? And I incorporated that letter in my September 24th last meeting letter to Chief Pavla, who is not here today. But in any event, I haven't gotten a written response. I did get a reply of some sort from Mr. Hopp. That's kind of vague and ambiguous. The chief in the past has said he doesn't get involved in Treasury matters. Mr. Hawk clearly concedes that on the date and time in question, there was an officer from Metro Transit going and doing something behind closed doors. As offline, I discussed with Mr. Hawk, why is when they read a card, right, it's like cloak and dagger. Why is that not made accountable and transparent to we the people? They've got a machine out there for credit card, but what about the paper cards that you're all doing away with, right? That ought not be. That ought to be open door and let us see, you know, what's going on. This letter, too, as I point out to Mr. Hopp, you've got 10 windows. Only two of them are manned. I mean, what gives her? That's the lifeblood of the organization. And again, this letter, you know, doesn't say much anything. The chief promised me a sit down, and I'm still awaiting a date and time short up. Mr. Chair, if you want to be in attendance, Mr. Requa, you know, as long as you don't bite me, I won't bite you. But certainly Chief Pavlock and Mr. Hopp and I. And I'm awaiting that happen. Not with saying the response from Ms. Hutchins.
Thank you, Mr. Sindrum.
Thank you.
Next piece of business is a very exciting one. Our salute to service. On behalf of the board, I would like to take the opportunity to honor two very special Metro employees through our salute to service portion of the board meeting. Today, as part of our Years of Service program, the board and Metro leadership are recognizing employees who have been with the authority for 50, repeat that, 50 years, that's right, and 40 years, respectively. Before we get to the formal presentation, I'd like to say a few words about each of these honored employees. Mr. Samuel King, I'd like to ask you to stand. King? Wow. First, let me say that you are our first 50-year honoree, and we couldn't be more excited about recognizing you. I can't believe it. You sure this is one your father who started 50 years ago?
Right,
yeah. So Mr. King started his extensive career at Metro in 1965 as a bus operator with the predecessor company, AB&W, in Virginia, before it became part of WMATA. He served as a bus operator until becoming a station manager in 1991, working out of Alexandria. And I see you have your station manager uniform on this morning. Everybody can see that. Now we know who to look, and I've seen them in the other stations. They are now uniformed, and that's what we should look for when we're looking for an outstanding station manager. Mr. King, thank you for 5 decades of committed service to the organization. Simply extraordinary. And if you'll stay for a minute, we'll get a picture of both you and Mr. Sterling Brown. Mr. Brown began his career in 1975. You can stay, Mr. King, can you stay? Mr. Brown began his career in October of 1975 as shop maintenance supervisor working out of the Bladensburg garage. In 2005, he moved into an acting position of superintendent of service vehicle shops, where he served until he was officially promoted into that position, and that is the position he serves in today. And again, thank you for your service. Dedication to Metro and to the people of this region are really commendable. You set the example for all of your fellow employees. And I'd like Jack Rico to join me in the center of the room so we can take a picture and give you your suggestions.
Wow. 90 years of service standing there in the middle of this room. Isn't that amazing?
Thank you. Mr. Requa, we have an employee spotlight.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For this month's employee spotlight, we recognize Metro Transit Police Officer Jason Overton for demonstrating enormous focus and springing into action when faced with a difficult situation. In mid-September, Officer Overton was on routine patrol at Rhode Island Avenue Station when he noticed a woman in the garage stairwell who had attempted to commit suicide by hanging. Without pause, Officer Overton relied on his training and moved into action. He wrapped one arm around the woman to relieve the pressure on her neck while quickly cutting the rope with his free hand. He immediately began to perform CPR on the woman while waiting for emergency personnel to arrive on the scene. She had a faint pulse when they arrived, and medics rushed her to a local hospital for treatment. At the end of September, we received word that the woman survived and remained in the hospital, but was on her way to a full physical recovery. Today, we applaud Officer Overton for his ability to act swiftly and smartly on the job. His actions saved the life and demonstrate that he is the true embodiment of a hero. Officer Overton, please come forward and join me with Chairman Downey for a photo.
All right, our next item of business is a report from the Accessibility Advisory Committee. Mr. Sheehan.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. It's very hard to follow the last two presentations that were made here. That's very impressive what individuals have done with respect to working at WMATA and also for that officer for the work that he's done. So my congratulations on that. Thank you for listening to my report. The first thing I'd like to do is to welcome Denise Rush and Elber Arista Silva, who are my vice chair and second vice chair. They will be coming on board. They started in October, and they will be at the quarterly meeting. So we're looking forward to having a good leadership team this year. And thanks to Tappan Banerjee and Phil Posner for the work that they have done, and they're going to continue to work on the committee. Particularly in the subcommittee roles. Several things that I wanted to discuss today. In particular, we have a priority seating report resolution that is a joint product that is from the RAC and the AAC. And I'm very proud of that report because what it gives is a joint resolution to a situation involving priority seating on buses that the RAC and AAC have worked on together. I think the joint partnership between the two organizations is good. The resolution has to do more, a lot with education, courtesy, and signage. And I think, and we'll present our specific recommendations in the executive meeting. In some of the public comment period, and then on the radio, we have heard a lot about fair discussions, possible fair increases or no fair increases. And I just want to say that the AAC is very interested in making sure that there are no fair increases with respect to Metro Access bus rail. So our position is right alongside what we've heard from the different organizations and individuals. We also are looking at ways that fares can be reduced with respect to dynamic pricing, particularly when rail system may be reduced, and we have some ideas with respect to that, and I know that we would need to put those ideas forward to the number crunchers to make sure that they would be fiscally responsible. In a couple of other areas that I wanted to chat about, Metro Access. One of the areas that we have seen with respect to Metro Access that I'm very happy about is in the same-day service in areas like DC Transit. That is a model that people are very, very happy with. We hear it time and again on the Metro Access front. We find that individuals are very pleased with it. I think it creates a win-win situation. It is a strategy that I would like to see us replicate in the other jurisdictions, and I know that that the jurisdictions are working on it and looking at it, and they want to put some plans together to make that a reality. It's something that the AAC thinks is a very good system, reduces the stress on Metro Access, and increases efficiency of the system. On the bus and rail side, we have been looking at the elevator outages. We find that the reports that we're getting as far as outages are concerned are very timely and accurate, and we think that those reports are extremely efficient and well done, and we appreciate that. On the area of the shuttle buses, which was another area that we discussed this past month, there is a quality control, some monitoring going on with respect to the shuttle buses. We find that we applaud that, and we find that that's very, very useful, and we would like to see that continue. That kind of service is very important for people with disabilities, particularly when the elevators are out of service. And lastly, something that I learned the other day that I'd also like to talk about has to do with the accessibility of documents on the WMATA website. I understand that the Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind will be assisting WMATA in making sure that documents on the web are accessible, particularly accessible for people with disabilities who are visually impaired, and so I applaud that. They're a great organization. I do the same kind of work for document accessibility at Department of Veterans Affairs, so I know that as far as accessibility on the web and accessibility of information, that's an important important process to go forward, and making sure that these documents are accessible, the entire website for all disabilities is a very good thing. Lastly, with respect to a couple of the projects that we've been working on, I got a report this morning based on the calendar year that we had a goal for improving 100 bus stops in the last calendar. And the latest numbers that I received regarding accessible bus stops is that we have worked on about 255 bus stops to make them more accessible. I think that that is absolutely wonderful. It's the kind of report that I like to hear, commitment from the jurisdictions, commitment from WMATA to make these bus stops accessible. We want to make sure that the fixed route system from where we're standing on the disability side is accessible so that if you want to use the fixed route system, you can use the fixed route system. If you have access to Metro Access, you can have access to Metro Access. But the idea of choice is paramount. And I appreciate the effort that is being done to make those bus stops accessible, make sidewalks, intersections accessible. I think that that says a lot about the authority and the direction that it wants to move. That is my report for today. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Sheehan. Are there questions for Mr. Sheehan? We certainly want all of our riders, but especially our disabled riders, to see Metro as their mode of choice. Whatever we can do to make it, that is what we should be doing.
Very good, sir. Thank you.
If not, the Riders Advisory Council, Ms. Armiston?
Hello. Good day. Our October report from the Writers Council is in your packet, so I will only go over a couple of highlights I wanted to bring up. The last several weeks have been a time of greater than usual writer input focus, and that's always music to the ears of the Writers Advisory Council. At our October meeting, we had Jason Minzer from research come to talk to us about the launch of the customer community. We knew it was coming, but it's exciting to us that it's here. We're excited that we'll be able to contribute to it on the rack. And we're also excited, probably as much as anything, is that we'll be able to take advantage of the information that the community provides to make sure that our direction is in sync with the writers at large that are part of the community. Another presentation we had was Lisa Schooley giving us an update about the public participation plan. I think it's really exciting, too, that we have a standard approach that the big projects will be using to make sure that the outreach is something that's consistent and thorough. So that's good news for us, too. We also, at our meeting, had more public input than we normally do. We had several representatives from the Writers Union, the new union that's been formed. And we had the founder, we had the chair of the new Writers Union, as well as some other members. A couple of our speakers were people who'd been we'd seen before from Save the Blue Line conversations, and they have joined forces with the Writers Union on all of the issues that they want to address. I think that there's no doubt the Writers Union and the Writers Advisory Council have an objective that many of you in this room share. The board, I'm sure, shares, and much of the staff that has anything to do with writers. We care about writers, and we want to have make sure the writers' voices are heard. I think that there's always room for another voice, and I welcome them. The RAC welcomes them. I went to their first meeting, which was Monday night, as did two other members of the RAC, and to hear what they're thinking about and talking about. Again, I know we have the same objective. They may very well at times have a different perspective on an issue, and they may well have a different approach for addressing it, but they do have the same objective, and I think the voice is something that we need to listen to. I also want to talk about our work plan for this year. Throughout the year, the RAC receives presentations from staff. We get questions of things, you know, for us to provide feedback on, and we do that, and we do that happily. We also, though, in our work plan, have various topics that we have initiated a look at during the year, and three of those we will be talking after this meeting with the executive committee on those three, which have to do with mobile applications, station manager processes, and budget policy for 2017. And while I'm talking about that meeting, because of the meeting today, we have three members of our leadership team from the RAC with us. So I'm going to ask you three to stand up. I know they weren't planning on this, but we have on the left Bob Fogel, who's our Maryland Vice Chair, Jeremiah Bush, who's the Chair of our Budget and Finance Committee, and Dan Turk, who is our DC Vice Chair. So this is their first time. Well, Bob's been to one board meeting before in my place when I was out of town, but the others are new, so thank you for being here. And let's see, I think my final topic is that we had a transition with the RAC that is official as of October 1st. We are now working more closely with Jason Minzer and Joy Moore from his team as our coordinators on the staff. We still get to keep Jennifer Ellison and John Pasek as our board bridges to the board, and there's just they've been everything to us for a long time, and so we are glad that we don't have to lose them, but we're excited about being connected to the research group and being much closer to the in crowd as far as what's happening with what our customers saying and what are they telling us. So we're excited about that. That's it for today. Any questions from you? Comments?
Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Boulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Barbara, thanks. I couldn't go to this Writers Union meeting. Can you give us the highlights of what that entailed?
Sure.
In the context of, as we've discussed, our advisory committee that you chair, mm-hmm. and now we have this other entity, for the board and for myself, just what is this sort of developing to become?
I think that, first of all, they've had about, it's well over 1,000, I don't know the exact number, of riders or people have signed up to joining their union, which is free membership. At their meeting Monday night, there were, my count was somewhere around a couple of hundred people came Monday night, and to share what their concerns were, to try to come up with a plan of attack for what are the issues that are most near and dear to their hearts and what to do about them. I think it's very safe to say that, you know, they're an external entity, whereas we are much more an internal entity. There are pluses and minuses for each, and, you know, we have relationships with the board already established, and we work with the staff and the board to make recommendations. And I think they're coming from purely the writer experience, and they are, but they have the same objective. They'll just probably be, they feel that little more independent voice. And I don't feel in any way ever that I have to restrict what I say because I've got to make people happy here. I mean, I feel like we have the voice to say what we think. But it is still an inside voice in terms of, you know, our working relationship with staff and the board, whereas theirs is more an independent outside group. And I think they will have different tactics. You may see them here someday, for all I know. But I think there's a room for both voices. Does that answer your question?
Wanted to get your perspective and, you know, guidance on that matter. Mm-hmm.
I'd say that they're, you know, they have, we have a much more benevolent picture of Metro than they do. But that's not, you know, that's me, too, personally.
Any other questions for Ms. Armisen? No, thank you. We'll see you sure. at the executive committee
yes.
session in
thank
a few
you.
Minutes. I have just one business item to take up for the chair's report. We have a vacancy on the Accessibility Advisory Committee that we need to fill. It is resulting from the resignation of a District of Columbia member. We need to appoint someone to serve until that current term expires in June 2016. The staff has combed through previous applicants and has made a recommendation to us that I would move the board appoint Stephen Caffin to the Accessibility Advisory Council representing the District of Columbia to fill a term that expires in June 2016. Is there a second? Second. It's been moved and seconded. Can we have vote from the principal directors? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No? Then welcome to the AAC, Mr. Caffin, and we look forward to your contributions to this invaluable and helpful committee. Mr. Requa?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'd like to take a few minutes to update the board on our efforts to restore normal service near Stadium Armory Station. As you know, in late September, a significant fire broke out in the power substation closest to Stadium Armory, destroying critical equipment and leaving us with reduced power to operate blue, orange, silver line service through the area. As a result, we augmented service to reduce delays and stop-and-go service as much as possible for our customers. Currently, during weekday rush hours, Stadium Armory is being served by blue line trains only, with all orange and silver line trains passing through the station without stopping. Earlier this week, we launched a web page to provide our customers with detailed information about every step being taken to restore full power to the area and resume normal operations. The good news, we now believe that two of the three transformers damaged by the fire can be salvaged, rehabilitated, and returned to service on a temporary basis. The first week of testing has been completed, and we are now optimistic that normal service will resume before the end of the year, reducing the service impact to 3 months rather than the original estimate of 6 months. Once regular service resumes for our customers, more work will be completed in the new year to permanently rebuild the substation. Everyone at Metro, from our infrastructure and operations teams to our procurement department, is working as quickly as possible to remedy this. We view this as an emergency, and we are responding with that in mind. That includes some work taking place around the clock and expedited procurement procedures so that we aren't held up waiting for parts. I will continue to provide updates to the board, all of which will be available online to our customers at WMATA.com/stadium. Before we move on, I'd like to share a video that can be found on our new webpage. You'll see Assistant General Manager Andy Off providing a tour of the damage and overview of the situation.
September 21st, this parking lot area was full of emergency personnel, smoke pouring out of the top of this bench cap. Also, the emitting was from that one retention board that was destroyed prior to the September 21st. This is what the emitting board looks like. We believe that the fire started within the top coils of one of these units inside. I've had many discussions with some of our most experienced power personnel, and they have never seen an event like this in their 30 to 35 years. That said, we believe this is probably the most catastrophic substation fire, smoke, system. Throughout the system, we have about 105 one of the that's like hours like or so when one of those removed, we're in the state of so it's where before we had three substations, 3 miles. We lost this one. Now we want to test two. So because of that, that's not be from train same speed. That is a head sort of distance between trains. Because we're putting too much demand on the system that's been created due to the loss of the substation. First phase was essentially this entire room covered with fire retardant material, so they were used to extinguish the fire. Once we were complete cleanup, then we commenced with testing. We were going through every piece of equipment as if it's new, conducting the same level of testing and commissioning that we would have been supposed to do. But the equipment is not so therefore, we're repairing this type of equipment, getting the parts we need to sell this equipment, takes a similar car as compared to a commercial house process, where, you know, commercial catalytic transformers are readily available. Part time, we fully understand frustration that's caused every day for working to supply safest
we talk about many top priorities. This is Andy's top priority. On another subject, this Sunday, Metro Rail will open 2 hours early at 5 a.m. to accommodate runners and spectators of the Marine Corps Marathon. With the race starting just before 8 a.m., an early opening was negotiated with the event organizers to ensure public transportation will be available for runners getting to the start line. To accommodate the expected high ridership, Metro will operate additional Blue Line trains at key times throughout the day. Also of note, the Pentagon and Roslyn bus terminals will be closed on race day from 4 a.m. to 4 p.m., with Metro bus service relocated to nearby terminals and minimal inconvenience to our customers. And finally, I'd like to recognize one of our Metro's leaders, Police Chief Ron Pavlik, for his participation in the Eno Center for Transportation 2015 Senior Executive Program. This is a competitive program, and Chief Pavlik was one of just 26 participants chosen from transit properties across the country. The group is spending this entire week focused on strategic management, leadership, and critical emerging industry issues. While Chief Pavlik is in class today, we are certainly very proud of his efforts to continuously improve and grow as a leader and bring his new learning back to Metro. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Rico, and I'm sure our customers were happy to hear about the around-the-clock work and the real attention to Stadium Armory. It's critical to them. It's critical to us. In that regard, I should say a few words about the customer appreciation board member meet-and-greets that we're undertaking. I want to thank those customers who came to Wheelie Avenue and Benning Road earlier this week. I know that Mr. Corcoran, Ms. Harley, and members of the executive leadership team got good and substantial feedback and suggestions from our riders and our stakeholders at those sessions. It's good to be able to hear directly from the customers. It's good to be able to hear directly from the employees. And we want to assure them that feedback is appreciated and will be used. We have a number of additional meet-and-greet events remaining through most of November, and I would encourage all of you and all of our customers to join with us. You can see the schedule on WMATA.com, and I hope to see lots of people at those events. I'll be doing three of them. I know many other people will be doing two or three of these, and it's a good opportunity for us. At this point, we get to the business of the session, and I would recognize Mr. Evans, Chair of the Finance Committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. There were two actions that were referred to the board from the October 8 meeting of the Finance and Administration Committee. The first is the establishment of a trust for other post-employment benefits. So essentially what this does is this piece of legislation establishes a trust for other post-employment benefits and funds it with $4 million. That's all it does. It establishes a trust and funds it with $4 million. And just a little background. In June of 2009, 6 years ago, the board authorized the creation of this trust to allow for future pre-funding of OPED liabilities. To conform with General Accounting Standards Board's requirements, the trust must be irrevocable, dedicated to providing benefits to the retirees, these are our employees who are retired, and legally protected from creditors of the employer or a plan administrator. The FY 2015 budget, which was passed unanimously by this board, included an initial contribution of $4 million to the trust. Other post-employment benefits include non-pension costs for retiree medical and prescription drug coverage and life insurance. Now, Metro's annual expenses for this OPED, which are funded on a pay-as-you-go basis, I mean, we pay these dollars out of operating dollars, were $38 million in FY 2014. The current actuarial estimate of Metro's unfunded long-term liability is $1.5 billion, an unfunded liability right now of $1.5 billion. Recognizing the unsustainability of this practice in June of 2009, recognizing the unsustainability of this practice as part of the FY 2010 budget, the board unanimously authorized the creation of a trust to allow for the future pre-funding of OPED liabilities. Now, had this trust been established and funded in 2010, we would be well on our way to having a sustainable trust for our retired employees, but it wasn't done. Subsequently, though, this board in March of 2014, as part of the 2015 budget, this board unanimously, I stress that word again, unanimously authorized an initial contribution of $4 million to the OPED trust. WMATA has retained outside counsel and has prepared the appropriate trust documents, including the trust agreement governing accounting standards board statement number 43. Now, upon a board approval of the trust agreement, the trust will be established and funds in the amount of $4 million only, that were approved unanimously in the FY 2015 budget for this purpose, will be transferred into the custodial account until a permanent custodian and investment policy are established by the trustees. Since the funds to be transferred into the trust have already been included in the adopted and now concluding fiscal year 2015, the funding impact, according to the authority, is zero. The staff recommends approval to establish the irrevocable trust for the pre-funding of the OPED for the WMATA retirees. Now, a chart was distributed earlier in our documents. I don't know if it was distributed today, but it's a chart of what happens if we take this action or if we don't take this action. If we take this action, in 10 years, Metro's contribution will be even across the board, the fund will be sustainable, and PAYGO contributions actually disappear. If we don't take this action, you can see by the blue line, nobody can really see this, it just increases exponentially into the future. So in 10 years, the authority will be paying in the hundreds of millions of dollars every year out of its operating dollars for this fund. Jurisdictions around the country have already adopted this. In the region, we did a quick survey. Virtually everybody has one, except Metro. Now, the reason I've gone into this long explanation, which I wouldn't have done otherwise, is because I'm told that Maryland is going to exercise its jurisdictional veto and not support this. So we will not have a fund, and we will not put the $4 million that has already been earmarked for this fund, is sitting waiting to go into this fund, into the fund. What concerns me is, and I've had some newspaper articles here, and I'll just read this one. It's about the governor. Governor Hogan takes a stand on protecting Maryland's pension fund. Maryland governor who assumed office vowing to halt what he called budgetary gimmickry in Annapolis took a step Thursday to give substance to that vow. This is back in March. After remaining silent for 2 weeks about a raid by lawmakers on annual contributions to the state's pension fund for current and future retired public workers, Mr. Hogan threw down the gauntlet, and I quote, "Raiding the pension fund represents the kind of short-term thinking that has put Maryland in the precarious financial position we face in January, and I simply cannot allow these actions to continue. Protecting the integrity of our pension system is a common-sense measure that allows the state to keep its promises." Now, it's hard for me to reconcile how the governor would direct his two representatives here
to vote against us establishing a fund, just establishing the fund, and putting only $4 million into it, and yet take a position in Maryland as he did. Virginia, my good friend Governor McAuliffe, he sees this. Governor proposed $150 million to buy down the VRS liability. Virginia is a very well-managed, financially responsible jurisdiction, really a model for me. And they do it right, as does the district, as does Maryland. So we at Metro need to do the same thing. Now, one of the interesting things, again, because of Maryland's position, is 73% of Metro employees live in Maryland. This is a chart I have. 72.04% of the Metro employees live in the state of Maryland, 14.9% in Virginia, and 13% in the district. So not only is this common sense financially, but this is largely for Maryland residents when they retire. So I would ask everyone today to please, regardless of who is giving you direction, we are establishing a fund. We are putting a modest sum of $4 million into it. That's all we are doing. We're not committing to future payments. We're not going to committing to anything. Just establish the fund, which was recommended, incidentally, back in 2009, 6 years ago, put in the $4 million and move forward from there. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move this at this time.
Is there a second? Moved and seconded. Is there discussion?
There is discussion, Mr. Chairman.
Yes. It's on. Yeah. No, it's off again.
Mr. Evans, the $4 million you mentioned, could that money was set aside in the 2015 budget? 2015 year is over now, right? We are still awaiting the audit results for 2015, but the money was set aside, so there is no new expenditure. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. Evans indicated, I'm going to vote against this resolution. I want to explain the reasons why. My jurisdiction, Maryland, believes, and I believe, that potentially $275 million to fund the OPBET trust, which is what this resolution and the trust eventually calls for over the next 10 years or so, is a mistaken priority for WMATA at this time, given the myriad of safety and reliability issues WMATA faces. First and foremost are the critical safety issues plaguing the Metro Rail system. There needs to be a laser-like focus on safety and improving reliability to meet our riders' needs. That needs to be the board's primary focus today. In this connection, before we start putting away $5 million or $10 million a year in a lockbox to pay for future benefits, because that's what the trust is, we need to figure out what the cost of meeting the 91, and I underscore that, 91 corrective action plans resulting from the recent Federal Transit Administration safety audit earlier this year that Metro has agreed to comply with. And we need to look at what the FY17 budget will look like. A special challenge this year when costs are increasing at a rate of 6% per year and traffic and revenues are flat, if not declining. What are the needed costs to be budgeted for safety improvements this year? Will the budget require fare increases? Will the budget require increased subsidy payments from the jurisdictions? We need to answer these questions first. Putting $275 million potentially away in a lockbox when that money may be better spent this year or next or the year after on safety improvements makes no sense to me. The proper time to consider funding this OPEB trust is as part of the FY17 budget process, which begins next month, and not as a one-off exercise today. Let's do this right. Do it at the right time and in the right context. Now, the claim that this is needed and needed today to improve WMATA's creditworthiness rings hollow. A better indicator of creditworthiness would be for us to complete as Mr. Corcoran just made reference to, the fiscal year 2015 outside audits, audit on time, which by my calculations would be due this week, some 4 months after the end of the fiscal year in June. WMATA will miss this deadline, and for the second year in a row. That's the signal we need to send, that we can meet deadlines and can run a safe and reliable transit system, not by putting $275 million potentially in a lockbox that we can't touch for 10 years to fund some calculation of future benefits. Now, Maryland historically has funded its retiree health benefits on a pay-as-you-go basis, PAYGO, as Mr. Evans referred to it. Now, that's the way that the feds fund Social Security and Medicare. That's right, I repeat, that's how our federal government funds Social Security and Medicare payments. Now, in 2007, the state created a post-retirement benefit trust and made contributions for 4 years until 2010. Maryland is now back to a pay-as-you-go system. Now, keep in mind, those 4 years represent a bipartisan approach in Maryland. This is not something that was done exclusively by Republican administrations. No rating agency is questioning Maryland's creditworthiness, and the state has a very high credit rating for its bonds. Now, as Mr. Evans pointed out, the board originally adopted this trust resolution back in 2009. I don't know if that was before or after the Red Line accident, but I know it was adopted before this year's FTA safety audit, and it was adopted before last year's FTA financial management audit, and it was adopted before this January's Lanfon smoke incident and the number of critical safety issues WMATA faces in its wake. And I know it was adopted before traffic and revenue went south, and instead of growth, we have declining traffic and revenue on our system. This is not the time to act on something that has been around for 6 years, a six-year-old board resolution to fund the OPEB trust. It can wait another 6 months to a year. We have already put it off for 6 years, and the board does not have to decide to act on it today. Indeed, with a new general manager hopefully to be selected by the end of this month, we should give him or her the opportunity to review the need to fund the OPEB trust in fiscal year 17 and make a recommendation to the board whether this is the right step to take this year. That's what we hire big people for. That's what we hire the new GM to do, to make tough decisions. I am sure the new GM's recommendation will be well-reasoned and it will deserve my support. So in this, Maryland board member will vote against this mistaken priority for WMATA at this time. And I would urge my colleagues to refocus our efforts on getting back to making Metro a safe and reliable system as soon as possible. Thank you.
There's someone to be heard, Mr. Price.
They are reserved at this time for the original intended purpose.
So, in essence, $4 million cannot be spent for anything.
That's correct.
So, in terms of this, no reason why it cannot be used for. And then also, approximately, Mr. Evans, in terms of the number of employees that work for Metro, I think the number is around 9,100 something. These are your residents. We have a solid pledge for employees to fund them. And given the fact that our age is very tragic, what is the cost to make them suffer from not having proper funding in terms of their benefits? We're responsible for companies not to fund programs. And if you've got a fund issue, it's not the way to go. And while you use the federal government's example, I take no solace from it because there's been much debate about the Medicare funding. So, Mr. Bowman, I would just simply say to you, first of all, $4 million cannot be spent for anything else. Secondly, there's not a question of $200 million being funded this year. That's a bounding
That's correct.
Okay. So I see no reason why you cannot establish this trust and place $4 million in it. It will not make a better difference. Now, as it relates to safety, yes, there is a safety. We oversee we are budgeting for this coming year to address those safety issues. So I would humbly respect the share with you that $4 million are already there, they're restricted, cannot be used for anything else. So what is the harm of allowing the management to place the $4 million in the trust? We still can't touch it now, won't be able to touch it once in the trust. I would like to believe that as we talk about safety, we talk about commitment to our employees, I think we have an obligation to fulfill our solemn promise to our employees to fund this. Make sure that they're able to continue their health care benefits without any potential interruption because of something that may happen. Those are my comments. I would encourage my colleague to do the respectful thing from a good management and governance point of view to follow. Thank you.
Ms. Hutchins?
I'm going to support the motion that's on the table, and I'm going to support it because I really do think that the point that's being made here is that we have made a promise, and we're just simply defying the time that we keep the promise. But most importantly, we made the commitment last year. We've already started this process. I recognize what my colleague from Maryland is saying in terms of the concern about safety, but at any point, all of us have to come to the table to meet all of the obligations, and that we have that opportunity to make that analysis as we go forward. But the motion on the table is to establish a trust and start the commitment that's needed. And it's unfortunate that we've become divided over this because it does, I think, a clear understanding to our employees what our commitments are, but also a well management of our finances. It is not good to continue to not fund the trust of the retirement system for our employees. But I would hate to send the message today that we are incapable of doing more than one thing well, and most importantly, that we could at least plan forward in recognizing our challenges. It's unfortunate that we would divide on this issue because it really is not that hard of an issue to divide on today. I would hope that the commitment that we started with was a commitment Maryland had made in the beginning and that they'd be willing to keep going forward. So, unfortunately, I'm going to vote with the motion, but I really hate to see the divide that's occurring here. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. I would just like to respond to a few points made by my colleague, Mr. Price. This is not a matter of $4 million. This is a policy decision. And once we make this decision, this board is making a commitment for the next 10 years to keep funding this trust at an amount of $5 to $10 million or maybe $15 million a year. But we're making a commitment, and we're not prepared to make that commitment. And that's where the $275 million comes from. You're right. It's not this year. But we're making a decision. We're making a commitment. We're making a vote. And I'd like to know what our other obligations are before we commit to putting $275 million away in a lockbox for the next 10 years when we have so many other obligations before us. Second of all, we do have an obligation to our employees, and there is nothing that Maryland is doing that undercuts that responsibility, moral or legal, because at the end of the day, as Mr. Evans pointed out, these are operating costs, and the compact obligates the jurisdiction to pay operating costs of the authority upon vote of the board. And Maryland is not going out of business. So we will be here 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, to meet the operating cost obligations to the extent that that may include increased funding for our retiree benefits. So that's a phony issue, to be clear. Finally, we waited 6 years to do this. We can wait six more months. We can wait till we have a new GM on board who can take a look at an issue that will affect him and his administration of this organization for the next 5 years or perhaps and hopefully longer. We should give him that opportunity to take a look at that issue and give us a well-reasoned recommendation. That's what I ask you to do. Thank you.
Mr. Price, and then Mr. Evans, and then Mr. Price.
Okay, thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Goldman, and you just made my point. We have waited 6 years. Had we started 6 years ago, we would be well on our way, three quarters of the way to having a sustainable fund. Because we've waited 6 years, we are still at the beginning. And if we delay, here's the problem. The problem is Chicago. Chicago is a very well-run city, does a lot of things right. But I can tell you, Rahm Emanuel is sitting there today with a city that is on the verge of bankruptcy, probably with no way out. Because 10 years and 15 and 20 years ago, the city didn't fund its pension liability. The thing that is bringing that city down is its unfunded pension liability. Short and simple, there's no other reason. It is easy not to do this. I was in the District of Columbia when we didn't. There was always a reason to spend the money on something else. Because this is a future obligation. This isn't a present obligation. Nobody's going to get hurt tomorrow if we don't spend the money today. But I can tell you this entire system, with today a $1.5 billion problem, will come down 10 years from now when we do not have the money to pay this. This is something that people, when we're all gone 10 or 15 years from now, are going to look back and say, I'm really glad they had the foresight to do this. As I'm sitting here today saying, I wish people 10 years ago had the foresight to do this, so I wouldn't have to sit here today. Just a couple more points. To use the federal government as an example is ridiculous. The federal government has a $13 trillion deficit. They print money. So they, when they have to do the pay-as-you-go, they just overspend. Maryland, the district, and Virginia have to balance their budget every year. The federal government hasn't done that since Roosevelt, I think, was president. So that is just not going, that is not a good example at all. And finally, I guess this is kind of my history talking. To use a jurisdictional veto on an issue like this is unheard of. I can't remember the last time somebody used a jurisdictional veto. I tried to do the research. I think it goes back 10, 15, 20 years. Somebody tried to say the district did it 5 years ago, but I can't find any record of that. But even if they did, to use a jurisdictional veto on something like this, Mike, you're just opening up the door. The real problems down the road, and Katura, you're opening up the door to real problems. I mean, why would you use a jurisdictional veto on something like this that is so minor? That was put in place to use on something that is extraordinarily important to a jurisdiction. Not something like this. So I can't tell you how disappointed I am in the course of this. And I would just urge one of you to vote for it.
Anyone else?
Just for clear the record, Chair Evans. The last jurisdictional veto was applied by D.C. members in 2010 on a motion to reallocate snow removal funds. Thank you.
I'm going to support the motion because I believe the organization owes it to the public and to the region to do more than one thing at a time. Building a safe and reliable system is one of those things, and we will do what is needed to bring the system to a state of good repair and keep it there. But we also have an obligation to create an entity and manage an entity that is fiscally sustainable. If we're incurring costs today, and we certainly are incurring costs for our current workers to pay their retirement benefits when they retire, and we're going to have a wave of retirements over the next decade or so, and then those people will be retired a long time. We wish them long lives. They will be meeting or requiring a lot of medical attention over those years. Medical costs rise. We're doing nothing except kicking the can down the road to say we put nothing aside for what is a known, measurable, identifiable obligation. If we treated everything this way, we would just open up the cash box each day and pay what we can in the way of service. We can't operate that way. We need to be an organization that is sustainable. Mr. Evans talked about the district's financial problems. I can speak to New York's financial problems. I was there shortly after the near bankruptcy when the Emergency Financial Control Board took control of the city, and one of the very first things they did, and one of the things that has stayed in place ever since, is to assure that the city and its agencies, like this New York City Transit Authority, budget on what's called a GAAP basis, generally accepted accounting principles basis, in which obligations that are incurred are paid for when they are incurred, not kicked down the can, kicked down the road to be paid for later. That's one of the reasons. You talk to the architects of the recovery of New York, that is one of the principal steps that was taken, is put that city over the remaining, over the 30 years since then, in a very strong, sound financial position. We're going in the other direction. Today it's OPEB. Tomorrow it could be other future obligations. Frankly, I would be charging, if I could, depreciation on our system on a current basis so that we would know as we're incurring the cost of depreciation, we were collecting the funds to pay for it. I recognize, and I'm glad it is recognized, that it is the obligation of the jurisdictions to make those operating budget payments when they are needed. But I would think it would be in the interest of each jurisdiction to assure that the authority does what's necessary across the board for all of the jurisdictions to get predictable future contributions they'll have to make. What we're setting up now, and I'm sure we're not going to raise fares at a rate fast enough to cover the rise in medical costs for people who are now or soon retiring, is we're setting up a continuing hit on those jurisdictions. We have the compact to say you have to pay it. We certainly hope that each of the jurisdictions has the fiscal capabilities to pay it, but we don't have a promissory note that says, here's the money and we can count on it when it comes in. It will be a budget fight. In future years, it'll be a fight to make what will be vastly increased payments for future retiree medical benefits, and it will come at the expense of something else, either in the service budgets or the fares or other items on the budget. I don't think we should be short-sighted. I think we should be running this organization as a business. This is what a business will be doing. Very soon, the Government Accounting Standards Board will be requiring that these liabilities, this $1.5 billion, goes on our books. Goes on our books. All of a sudden, in that year, we'll be looking like an entity that has no longer a fiscal future because our liabilities will be enormous and our assets won't change. So I think we should do both of the right things. We do have to fix the system. Much of that will be through the capital budget, and we certainly need jurisdictional cooperation to get a six-year capital plan. Congress, as we speak, is actually working on legislation to provide a six-year federal capital commitment for transit systems across the country. But the expectation is that once you make those capital investments, you do the right thing on the operating side to assure fiscal sustainability. So I will support the motion, and I also will support Ms. Hutchins' point that if we're going to jurisdictional vetoes over issues of this magnitude, it does not speak well for the governability of this institution. Any other comments? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Two noes from Maryland. The Secretary will report that despite the majority, this resolution was not adopted. Mr. Evans?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second item on the agenda is to increase to the Potomac Yard Station project budget and FY 2016 reimbursable capital budget. Staff requested an increase to the budget of the Potomac Yard Station project and a corresponding increase to the FY 2016 reimbursable capital budget in an amount of $5.8 million. This increase, which is being fully funded by the City of Alexandria, fund environmental and design work on the project. The action will increase the current budget for this project from $5.2 million to $11 million in the overall Metro FY 2016 capital reimbursement budget from $73.7 million to $79.5 million. I'd like to move approval at this time.
Second, Mr. Chair.
Any discussion? Hearing no request for discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Mr.
No,
Chairman, I would just note that Mr. Corcoran had to leave, and so I voted for Virginia.
Mr. Corcoran. Thank you, Ms. Hines. Reports from the district?
Nothing from the district, Mr. Chairman.
From Maryland?
Nothing today.
Nothing today. NVTC?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman, Ms. Hines has a report on NVTC work from Arlington as well as around.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to take a moment to share some of what's going on in Northern Virginia related to our agency. Last evening, the Emergency Preparedness Advisory Commission in Arlington County held a personal preparedness and safety on public transit meeting at which one of WMATA's own Office of Emergency Preparedness folks participated along with Arlington Fire, Office of Emergency Management, and our ART bus people. I understand there were 30 people in attendance and that they have a couple of good ideas which they will be passing our way in order to share what they heard from folks. Northern Virginia Transportation Commission is holding at least two and potentially more meetings in the month of December to gather understanding from the public of key concerns related to WMATA, as well as to provide a context for developing and prioritizing a report that would go to MVTC that would be available to us as the Virginia representatives, but also be shared with the board, again, regarding priorities and budgeting, as well as other things related to this agency. I want to thank Mr. Requa for making his staff available to work on these things. I think it's another way. We talked about pop-ups and other things that we can be out in the community and hearing directly from our riders as well as other elected officials. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Mr. Bolger?
To be aware of, this thing, yeah. So the IRS announced today or yesterday that the parking benefit for all of you drive is going up to $255 a month next year, and the transit benefit will stay at $130 a month until we get it changed. Not the good news we were hoping for.
Yeah.
On COLA. That Social Security was flatlined, but parking continues to march forward as we speak.
A federal report, I alluded to it in my previous comments, fingers crossed. Congress is working on a number of things, but one that is expected to get done is a multi-year transit and highway reauthorization program. At least a six-year program, maybe only funded for 3 years, but at least at current levels and perhaps a little bit above that. There also will have to be a short-term extension because the ability to spend out of the Highway Trust Fund actually terminates on October 29th. But the expectation is now that there's a sign of progress on a long-term bill, they will be able to move a short-term bill if the House is organized and has a speaker. Deals with other matters, but the bill that's being marked up today in the House and the one that passed the Senate would be relatively generous to WMATA in terms of the way the various programs work, and we certainly hope that it will become law, and that at some point this year there also will be appropriations, which are also held up in larger issues. So work goes on the Hill. Any other business? If not, declare the meeting adjourned. And ask my executive committee colleagues to join us for the meeting with the advisory groups in the meeting room.